Don was a musician, Grammy-winning producer, composer, and president of the legendary jazz label Blue Note Records, is at Skidmore College and has been for the last day or so. Last night, he presented the annual Carr Distinguished Interdisciplinary Lecture, and today he is working with students. He is discussing the past, present, and future of the music business, including career opportunities. It's a great pleasure to welcome Don Was to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It's an honor to be here, Joe. Thank you, man.
How are things going at Skidmore?
Oh, it's great, man. What a great school. It's a wonderful program they have up here. And it's high adventure for me to be up here and be part of it. Really, really great energy. It's a very inventive program that they've got. And I wish it was around when I was going to college.
What opportunity does it give you to talk to students about your experiences and to help them in some way, shape, or form?
Well, it's good. In the talk last night, we got into topics that I think it's broader than music, really. I think it's important that people know that they have to be persistent in pursuing whatever it is that they want to pursue in any field. And to be creative and inventive about how they go about pushing their way to realizing their dreams, and really to never give up on it.
For you, that part of realizing your dreams, you started as a professional musician. At what point did you start to reconfigure and say that producing was something that you could do, that you wanted to do, and ultimately that you were very good at?
Well, that's a good question. I guess, we produced our own records, so there wasn't much thought of what that entailed. And we ran into an interesting situation in the early 80s. I had a band called Was Not Was that really kind of reflected the musical climate of Detroit, Michigan, which is where I grew up. And there was some R&B and some jazz and some rock and roll, all kind of hopefully seamlessly woven into the fabric of the music. And we had three African-American singers, but my partner David and I, who were white guys, we'd go out and we wrote all the songs and we generally do the interviews. And our record company said to us, "You're a marketing nightmare. If you white guys are going to do the interviews, then you got to be a rock and roll band and get some white singers. Or if you're going to be an R&B band, stop doing the interviews and let your singers do the interviews." And it was very confusing, and they basically were telling us, "It's outrageous, as I sit here and tell you about it." But they said, "Get white singers in your band." And we refused, and they put us on suspension. And I thought it was like baseball. You
right.
Serve your 30 days, and then they put the record out.
Then you move on.
Yeah, but they didn't. It wasn't meant like that. It was like permanent suspension until you complied. And it took about 3 years before we realized it meant get another record company to buy the record and put it out. So in that time, other people at different record companies said, "Well, wait a minute, they saw it as a plus." They said, "They're not the singers, they just write and produce the records. So let's get these guys to produce some records." And so in our downtime, I became a record producer.
In that role as record producer, how would you define it? The way you do it, what do you see your job as?
I see my job as being to figure out what the artist is hearing in their head and what their vision is for the record, and then to help them achieve that by whatever means necessary. And it's different with every artist. It could mean writing songs with them. It could mean writing songs for them. It could mean not going near anything. Just sitting there. And I just produced John Mayer, for example, and he's a guy, he wrote all the songs, he's playing all the guitars, he really knows what he wants to do. Before I can suggest something, he's already got an idea, and it's a great idea. So I was there primarily for validation of the ideas, just to say, "Yeah, that sounds good, dude. Yeah, let's stick with that." That's what he needed me for. Other people need it for more nuts and bolts kind of things. It's different every record.
Now and then I pace my place. I can't retrace how I got here. I cheat the light to check my face.
It's slightly harder than last year. Then all at once it gets hard to take. It gets hard to fake what I won't be. 'Cause one of these days I'll be born and raised, and it's such a waste to grow up lonely.
Compare that experience to something like Bonnie Raitt, who was sort of like restarting her career.
Yeah, but she was already Bonnie Raitt.
That was
a pretty easy record to make, to be honest with you. She had just come out of this period where she'd sobered up and understood that emotions that she was trying to previously drown now had to be vented through her music. So she was going to do something amazing. No matter, you know, she could have had a German Shepherd producing that record. she's one of the most talented artists in the world, man. I don't know a better singer than Bonnie Raitt, and she was just hitting the peak of her powers at that point.
A friend of mine, she cries at night, and she calls me on the phone. Sees babies everywhere she goes, and she wants one of her own. She's waited long enough, she says, and still he can't decide. Pretty soon she'll have to choose.
Who needed more than a German Shepherd? I mean, who was really guided by you?
It would be unsavory for me to tell you, really. You know,
yeah.
you're capturing people at their most vulnerable, and they open up to you and trust you. There was a point in 1993 where a friend of mine named Andrea Sachs, who's an editor at Time Magazine, but I went to junior high school with her. She said, just tell me the stories and let's write a book, and you can put it down, but you should have these things before you forget them, just on the record. I'll just interview you and then we'll write a book whenever you want to write a book. And I thought, well, this would be a violation of every principle of producing records to reveal all this personal stuff about these folks. So I made a decision in 93 to forget more than I remember. and I didn't want to be tempted later in life to do. So I would never tell you, man, you know. So.
Well, no, I understand that. I'm curious, though, because it obviously shows the facets, and as you say, every artist is different. So there's a different skill set that you have to possess. But at the core of it, there is a trust that they have to have in you for it to work.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, in very practical terms, your job is to make an artist feel safe to experiment, to stretch out, to know that they're not going to be ridiculed or embarrassed if they take a flying leap and land on their face. But you've got to take the leap in order to do something great. So making people comfortable with that is a large part of the gig.
With that said, have there been leaps that you don't necessarily like, but you understand why they're necessary?
Yeah, you know, I got kind of a basic philosophy, which is that you should never, there's a lot of double negatives in this, you should never produce an artist that you mind losing an argument to.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't respect them enough to lose every argument, don't do the record. So it's really, and by the way, you know, they're different kinds of producers, too. There's some producers who are the artist, and the singer could just as well be a saxophone or something. You know, they're brought in to do a very specific thing, and they may be the ones dancing in the video, but it's really the producer's record. And that's another way of doing it, too. And there are all sorts of ways in between. I'm just not, that's not how I do it. I don't do that well. I've tried. I made some boring records being trying to force an artistic vision on people. So I tend to gravitate towards artists with a strong point of view. And the fun thing is to get inside their head and figure out what they're trying to do and help them realize it. And at the end, if someone says, that's exactly what I was hearing, only better, then it's a huge success. I don't really base it on I don't base the validity of what you came up with on record sales. That has got to do with a lot of external circumstances.
What you were just explaining of how you feel and what you want to accomplish, I guess explains why you were interested in working in film as well.
Yes, absolutely. It's making music in film is you're in a very supportive role. You're there to not make hit records necessarily, but to do something that advances the story, that supports the director's vision. And if you do something that distracts because it's so powerful, then that may be great for music but terrible for the film.
You have an incredible list of credits for film, everything from Hope Floats to Thelma and Louise to 8 Seconds, Days of Thunder, and Toy Story, which I have to ask you about because that was something that was so new.
It was really new. That was actually a major turning point for me in understanding the role of music in film. It was the first Pixar movie. And we didn't know what Pixar was because they hadn't done the treatment yet. So it was John Lasseter's first film. He was at the session. It was Randy Newman and Lyle Lovett singing You've Got a Friend in Me. And so John Lasseter was like the cartoon guy.
Right.
We didn't really understand what I think Randy might have understood, but I was just brought in to produce that song, You've Got a Friend in Me. And so Randy sat down at the piano and he cut this version of it that's much slower than what you hear in the film. And put a whole new slant on the song. It was a really plaintive, wistful kind of thing. It was beautiful. And I thought, oh man, this is a great record. That's one of the best things Randy Newman's ever cut. And Lyle Lovett was singing the second verse and they were harmonizing. It was really poignant and lovely. And Lasseter kind of timidly came forward and he said, you know, it comes after the car chase scene in the movie and is really going to feel slow afterwards. And I was like, how dare you? Did you not hear the pathos in that performance? And I idiotically held my ground. And sure enough, they tempted into the movie and it was way too slow. And he was absolutely right. And we had to go to great lengths to speed it up. Wasted a whole lot of money and time, and it was a tremendously arrogant move on my part. And I learned at that point that you support the director, he's the artist.
And so whether that director, it's no different from the director or for the singer or the songwriter, it's the artist that you have to,
exactly
you have to
right.
follow.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
When you look at your role now with Blue Note Records since January of last year, is that a comfortable fit for you to be the head of a label?
Sure, because I believe in every artist on the label. That they wouldn't be on the label, you know, and you trust them, you encourage them to express themselves and to be themselves. You know, do something that's different. Do something that no one's ever heard before. You know, what's something you always wanted to record, but you never felt you could. Let's do that. You know, you're just trying to enable people to make the records that are in their hearts, which I think ultimately resonates more with listeners than something that's contrived to reflect the trend of the day.
Well, Don is at Skidmore College. He was there last night. He's there today and working with the students. And it's a great pleasure. I thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to talk to us. It's an honor and a pleasure. I thank you.
Thank you, John. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Again, Don Was, who has been the president of Blue Note Records since January of 2012. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, see it through, 'cause you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. Some other folks might be a little bit smarter than I am, big and stronger too, maybe, but none of them will ever love you the way I do. It's me and you, boy, and as the years go by, our friendship will never die. You're gonna see it's our destiny. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
Our tune for today is You've Got a Friend by Randy Newman from Toy Story. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.